One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
So I've been having this thought this week around sporting outliers and how we judge success. So I'm thinking specifically here about Leicester City in 2015-16, winning the league, performing well above their expected
everything,
and then not replicating that success later. And more recently, Emma Raducanu, who wins the US Open, and it's kind of remarkable. And now she's just had injury problems and she hasn't quite reached that level yet. And there's this interesting dynamic and there's this tension. Because on the one hand, Emma Raducanu is going to have won more Grand Slams than any British woman for 70 years or whatever it is, by virtue of winning one. But if she never made a quarterfinal again, she would have had a much less successful career on average, hypothetically, than 25 of those women. And it makes you think about how sport is judged and the fact that winning one thing, however outlandish and however momentum filled, so overwhelmingly defines your career in much the same way a band who, like The Lars, There She Goes. The Lars, I know, I'm talking about. There's 1,000 bands with 3 times their fan base that I don't know because they didn't have that one-off success.
Did The Lars have any other? The Lars had other big singles.
No,
nothing else.
Nothing.
Wow. Okay. I feel like they did, but I feel like I just don't know them.
Like their second and third most popular song on Spotify are just like remixes of
"There She Goes."
There She Goes.
She Goes Again. It was a good, really good song. The problem is you can have too much success. I think Leicester's a weird one. Just to touch on Leicester for a second, because if you'd done it the season before, they wouldn't have won the league. Done it the season after, they'd have been, I think, like 12 points off the top. I've got the table in front of me for the season they did it, but like 12 points off the top. And the season before, 6 points off the top. So they're also a particular season where they won the league. Maybe, I mean, you know, and the league, you sit top of the league because you're the best team in the league, right? Like they were 10 points ahead of Arsenal come the end of the season, 11 points ahead of Spurs. And they were maybe freakishly successful compared to their level of talent. But this shows, like, I guess the difficulty to judge those kind of things and the difficulty of, I guess, making teams consistent is one of the biggest issues, especially in modern sport where there's like cycles of fitness, there's judging, you know, your red zone, all these kind of things. I feel like Leicester probably pushed a lot of those, but this was like on the cusp of red zone. They almost had, and I mean this in the best way, like because of they were almost ignorant in the right departments that season for things to go well. And Ranieri is almost like, I don't know, like it didn't come out of nowhere for him. He's clearly a good manager, but he had the right way of fudging things for Leicester, that it fudged it just right. Like, you have to fudge Vardy in just the right way to fudge him.
Yeah, and there was kind of like a, of course everyone will stay fit the whole season. And of course we'll get a pizza afterwards. There's nothing to, this is simpler, guys. Whereas once you've been through three or four title races, the difficulties and the intricacies and the squad management, they didn't actually have the option to worry about that. Because Ayoa off the bench aside, there wasn't really much depth. Andy King, that's maybe all, a little bit.
Yeah.
Like Danny Simpson gets injured.
Yeah.
Michael Brighton gets injured.
Mm-hmm.
And they're fucked squad.
You're in real trouble. Like they're in, well, no, like more than real trouble. They're in like, they're basically back in mid table.
If Kante had missed five games that season, they wouldn't have won the league.
Right.
And I like to think of sport like this. Sometimes you just need the right, it's like a pie, the right ingredients at the right moment. So with Emma Raducanu in the US Open, it was a combination of things analogous to Leicester,
mm-hmm.
where in the first instance, all the top players by the rankings either weren't there, were injured, or played badly and got knocked out. She, despite not being fully fit, was just about fit for just about long enough in a way that could starve off any niggling concerns.
This is my point. Yeah, like the City finished fourth that season on 66 points. Liverpool finished on 60 points. Now, one thing I would say is it shows how difficult and diverse the Premier League was that season, because Chelsea finished 10th with 50 points, so 31 points off the top. You know, Everton were behind them. Stoke City finished in the top 10. West Ham finished. Southampton finished in the top 10. Manchester United 5th. And obviously Arsenal and Tottenham 2nd and 3rd, respectively. It was a hard season. Villa went down that year. Like Aston Villa, Norwich and Newcastle went down that year. That was...
Villa and Newcastle went down the year Leicester won the Premier League.
Yeah.
Is a fever dream of a sentence.
Because now it's the complete opposite of that. Newcastle almost topping the Premier League, and then obviously I don't think they'll be on to win the title this season. But Villa also improving. There's kind of a weird, there's a weird flip and I guess life cycle to all of this that is hard to quite put your finger on when you're not willing to look beyond the norms.
And speaking of, I think Newcastle are in some trouble this year.
I'd love to know what your thought is on this. Like, I know this is going to be quite a broad topic, but why?
Two reasons. One, they have many, many more games and more high priority games. And number two, Chelsea, as we're going to discuss, are going to come back. Spurs are going to be much stronger than they were. Arsenal will kick on ideally for them. City will always be in there. Liverpool will be much stronger.
Manchester United
will be much stronger. Mm. And there's this third thing, now I'm talking about it, which is that now teams will have figured Newcastle out a little.
There is definitely that element, I think. Yeah, we should definitely discuss Newcastle. I think, let's just dive into Newcastle at the top of it. Like Newcastle finished on 71 points last season. They were 18 points off the top, which is Man City, only 13 points off Arsenal, which when you think in the grand scheme of things, like Newcastle gave up points to Liverpool. I think they only lost to Liverpool twice. Yeah, they lost to Liverpool twice that season.
And one of them was in the last minute.
And the other one was controversial.
The other one, Nick Pope got sent off.
Yeah, which he did deserve to be sent off. And that's one of those things where I'm like, this is where seasons live and die. Because if Newcastle hadn't have lost that game to Liverpool, Liverpool obviously wouldn't have finished, they would have finished fifth. But there were, like, this is where the Kloppification of Liverpool is quite interesting. And where I'm interested to see Newcastle's buying of quality. Like they've bought in Harvey Barnes, and you were saying earlier that Harvey Barnes, is he really that much of an upgrade over Alan St-Maximin? Is he really an upgrade, or is he just a cross step?
Oh, you know, this is where football has become a little bit sad and a little bit over collective.
Why?
In 20 years ago, being a tricky winger who was inconsistent but super talented and did fuck all defensively would be enough. Now the level tactically and technically is so high that he probably can't start for Newcastle anymore. This is St-Maximin.
Is that also, I mean, St-Maximin did some great things for Newcastle when that was needed. Do you really, is he almost in an outdated position for a lot of sides now where it's like he can't quite play what he needs to play? You'd almost rather have Harvey Barnes starting, who could, and this is where I think a lot of wingers are sort of being asked to change quite a lot, and where maybe, you know, you could compare Alan St-Maximin to very few other players in the league, possibly like Mo Salah, Antony. I'm trying to think of other examples. Maybe Saka, but even then, like as that position moves, because of these rotating eights or the tens that we now have, players are now expected to be able to come inside, but also play the eight or the 10. And do you get what I mean?
Yeah, totally. And you have to either be as good as Salah or as well-rounded as Saka.
Right.
Like Saka could play left back and has played left back a lot. Say Maximan is just in too much. The role has evolved from you stay on the wing and when you get the ball, take someone on, to hey, you now need to drop in and play 10, but also 8, but also come back and also drop in and also keep the ball.
To an extent, you also need to be able to follow tactical instruction just more than Alan St. Maximin's been used to.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about the nature of Eddie Howe and how collective his football has been, which, by the way, what a huge credit to him, because at Bournemouth, everyone said, what a nice guy, what pretty football.
Yeah.
But he's not, I mean, he can't defend, right? And he went to Newcastle and said, okay, well, time, first point, the ball's never in play. And when it is in play, we're going to be as intense as you can imagine.
Yeah.
Point two, we're going to sit incredibly deep, incredibly collective, and have Nick Pope start nice and high, no space between the goalkeeper and the back four, no space between the back four and the midfield, and let's go on the counter.
And what we're basically going to do is ape or, I don't want to say like, you know, copy, because I don't think it's that simple. It's very difficult to copy those things at the very top level. But we are going to do a lot of what the successful teams in the Premier League have done, and we're just going to try and play that way rather than playing to negate that way. So if you'd have put the heat maps of, and I think quite a few managers did this, but if you put the heat maps of Newcastle United over Liverpool and you put them over probably Liverpool, just because I think Liverpool's a lot easier to copy than Man City, because Man City's really complex to coach and probably has a lot of nuances that coaches just know they can't get their players to do week to week. They basically did a lot of what Liverpool did. Like they they weren't copying Liverpool this year. They were copying Liverpool kind of at their apex or just pre-apex going into that, where it was like, what did the fullbacks do? Cool, you do that. Trippier did a lot of what Trent did. On the other side, you had an Andy Robertson type who was kind of, who's
Dan Burn.
Dan Burn, like taller, but Andy, you know, still there's a lot of equivalency there. You had in Bruno Guimaraes, who had basically a Fabinho, but like an upgrade on Fabinho essentially. In terms of playmaking. And then what you did was just flip the ball winning back to the two guys either side and they won it, which by the way, wasn't, you know, Fabinho ball winning a good part of his game, not necessarily the part of his game that you would necessarily say is his best, but a decent one.
Yeah, the similarity between those two sides of the fact that fundamentally they were solid. The difference between the two sides is Liverpool tended to be slightly higher up the pitch and were happy to have, and Newcastle were much happy to have less of the ball.
Right. And then give it away. And I guess to try almost, they almost wanted the opposition to give it, to have it, to win it back, which
yeah.
is kind of an early Klopp idea as well, is like, you have it and we'll win it back.
The counter press. But I like this breakdown, because the original in my mind, he won't be the original overall. Hey, we don't want the ball. When you have the ball, that's when you're in trouble. It was right. Jose Mourinho at Porto.
Right.
And when he came to the Premier League, I like the stats. Him and Rafa came to the Premier League in the same season. And that was the lowest and remains the lowest number of average goals scored in the Premier League.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember between the two of those guys, they were almost, there was almost a competition as to how boring you could make a game. Like it was, I guess the winning like papers over a lot of that. Not for Rafa. I mean, sorry, that's disrespectful. Actually, Rafa won quite a lot of games while he was at Liverpool. But you get what I'm saying? Like
the psychology, though, is interesting, because they've both been accused of being the type of managers that would have got the best out of them as players. So
right.
they both were relatively limited footballers. And the idea was they would have needed a Rafa Benitez or Jose Mourinho.
But then within their teams, they also had a Rafa Benitez or a Jose Mourinho. So there was like a, you can look at a Steve Finnan or a Hossame or Ricardo Carvalho is unfair, but...
Damien Duff?
Even then, I think Duff has got qualities that Mourinho just never possessed, because he's belligerent. There's a lot of sort of robustness to him. And maybe that's, you know, you need to see some sort of Venn diagram that, you know, with Mourinho and his 11.
Well, the quote that I love, it was the former chairman of Real Madrid, whose name escapes me, was describing the first leg of Chelsea-Liverpool
yeah.
in the European Cup semi-final. And the game ended 0-0 at Anfield. And the quote was, people will dress up shit on a stick and tell you it's not a shit on a stick. But the way that Liverpool-Chelsea game was going was a sad reflection of football becoming more collective, physical and serious. Didier Drogba was the best player in the game, but only because he could jump the hardest. A 5-yard pass, No. A back heel, no. A bit of trickery, no. Footballers going to the dogs, kind of thing. That was the assessment at the time.
And jealousy is an ugly emotion, isn't it? Because, by the way, Madrid winning almost fuck all at that time. Like, genuinely close to fuck all is what Madrid was winning during that era. By the way, at the end of an era when they'd basically flattered to deceive so much with a team of Galacticos who completely did all the back heels and did all that other stuff. But what did they win? Not nearly as much as you would have thought looking at that team on paper.
Well, you know, the nice thing, because quite often on this podcast, Lawrence, I come in and I say, oh, football's becoming too collective.
For sure.
And that's bad. But actually, now I think about it, the collectiveness or the form of collectivity the football teams now play with City or Liverpool or Real Madrid is so exciting. It is collective, but now we press the ball nice and high. We have these like inverted fullbacks. So it's very tactical and technical, but it's quite entertaining, which is a big upgrade or a development on the prior form of collectivity, which was much more defensive.
To negate the opposition's strengths almost.
Right, whereas now football is very collective, but on the front foot. We have a plan A and no plan B. Whereas the type of collective that existed in 2004-05 was, generally speaking, we are going to focus more on the opposition than we are you.
Well, that's quite interesting as well, because Mikel Arteta is discussing that a lot in pre-season at the moment. He's talking about this whole, you know, I spoke about it a lot in my videos last year, not that I'm some sort of tactical genius, but I said there was Arsenal lacked a plan B that I felt was solid. And I saw it at Anfield. I saw it in multiple games. Plan A worked very, very well. But he said, now we don't go A, B, C, D. We go A1, A2, A3. And the thinking around that, the formulation of the idea is fascinating compared to... So in order to put that kind of squad together, in order to do A1, A2, A3, A4, rather than A, B, C, D, E, that's two different kinds of collective there, right?
Correct. And there's a philosophical and a pragmatic thing. Starting with the pragmatic, if you say we only really have one way of playing, your ceiling is higher because it's all you do. So there's a pragmatic, hey, if we want to compete with City and Liverpool in the long run, we have to be excellent at what we do. But there's also a philosophical thing going on, because if you listen to Angie at Spurs, he'll say, the football team needs to reflect who you are and my football teams will reflect who I am. And if they don't want to play it, they're out and results screw them, we play this way. So it's sometimes hard for me to know when I look at someone like Arteta, how much of this is him acknowledging, look, the levels to get 95 points in the Premier League and maybe still not win the league are so high that we have to just play one way and nail it. And how much of it is just him saying, God, this is the way football should be played. It's very difficult to tell without asking him.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. And to an extent, like I had this conversation the other day. I think the insight we get from footballers and managers at the moment is at an all-time high to an extent. And, you know, there's more microphones, there's more questions, there's more grilling, there's more twisting of what people say and kind of analysis of the granular level of everything that's been said. But to an extent, I don't know, I saw this interview with Frank Lampard and it was on...
Stephen Bartlett.
It was on Stephen Bartlett's podcast. Yeah, Diary of a CEO, which is fascinating. They both milk cows whilst doing that. And I enjoy pain pornography to an extent on podcasts. I've produced a lot of it myself from having some guests on and being like, and then what was the painful experience? And like, how did that pain define you? But I had a conversation with a friend and I said, like, what I really wanted to hear was like Lampard having some of his deficiencies like laid out in front of him and being like, go on then. Sort of, I don't want to hear him talking about how difficult, it's insightful, but to a degree, I want to hear Lampard offered, you know, this blind spot you've got.
Do you acknowledge that there's a blind spot?
Is it a blind spot? Like, is it like, I'd much rather know that than the pain of Frank Lampard, because I felt and I feel that the problem is, and it's kind of a trend at the moment, is there is an element of like, I think it's the overall cipher of the time, the zeitgeist, everything else, like we can capture it in some sense. The defining pain of a team is then is what is used to tell that story, right? So I feel that next season, when City inevitably stumble, because there is a lot of, and I'm not saying they stumble to therefore lose the title, but I'm saying they stumble because, you know, there's a few people aren't happy in the team.
They just want
the
treble.
They just want a treble.
Almost impossible to hit the ground running after winning the treble.
But you've just defined it in exactly the terms that this is, it is reflective of our time. Do you know what I mean? That we've almost set ourselves up for pain in some of the way that we framed that situation. And it's similar to the whole, the storytelling of Liverpool from last season. That was very, like, I was accused, I guess, in my videos of being too optimistic because I was saying, oh, look, the team is changing. And people are going, oh, you just, it's too optimistic, because I wasn't defining in terms of where the pain was. I wasn't defining in terms of the negative. I was defining in, I wouldn't even call it in terms of the positive. I was obviously looking for a positive outcome, but my terms were not in terms of negative and positive. I was just looking for what is changing.
So you're saying we have a hard on for
pain.
Pain.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're not the first generation to have that. But in terms of discourse right now, I think we have a real hard on for the surface pain, like the pain that presents itself, rather than the, you know, so someone might have broken their leg, but, you know, let's talk about the leg break rather than the stage 3 cancer that we found whilst doing the x-ray. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I mean, what would have been interesting is quite often you see very well articulated criticisms of managers in The Guardian or on Twitter or The Telegraph, whatever. But they're very rarely put to the manager in those terms. Like, it would be awesome to have a read along with Frank Lampard where someone says something like, and there was no excuse for there being such distance between the centre forward and the centre back. Any manager with a level 1 coaching badge can tell you need to be more compact. and have Lampard either say, yeah, no, good point, or it's true, but what we were trying to do was X, or no, they don't understand. Because you very rarely get the chance, give the managers the chances to defend themselves. And I understand it. It's about incentives, because on the one hand, if you go into a press conference and ask that, you're barred. And if you say it on the podcast, and then you try and get on David Moyes, as Stephen Bartlett did prior to Frank Lampard, and say, you had Samatta on the bench, and you didn't play him, and you had Paqueta, why are you such a negative prick? Difficult to get Lampard on.
Very difficult to get Lampard on. But also, if you nail that, like if they buy into that idea of this kind of level of evaluation, then you can make it into like a format almost. It becomes a bit of a...
What a podcast for, by the way, anyone listening who fancies an idea, is just get footballers on and...
And lay out their deficiencies.
Yeah, and give them an opportunity to respond.
I've always wanted to do that with... I don't know Trent Alexander-Arnold. I don't at all. But the few times I've interviewed him, I thought, wow, you are smart. Like, intelligently, in emotional level. Like, not just sort of like, oh, you are well-read. Sure he is. But like, oh, like, you get this. You know, he's got his own opportunities, media-wise. He's very good at portraying himself when he has interviews, all these kind of
things. Have you heard him speak to Alistair Campbell?
What?
Yeah, yeah.
No.
For GQ, Alistair Campbell and Trent had a chat.
Which kind of makes sense, right? Like, Alistair Campbell and Liverpool kind of cross over in a kind of political sense. They're agitators.
They're also, this is going to sound like a strange Nick Hornby-esque analogy, but I see the similarities between the two of them. There's like a unique creativity to both of them, sort of a background fatal flaw, perhaps not a fatal flaw, depending on where Trent plays and how he develops.
Who you team up with. Who you're the spin doctor for, who essentially.
And I think it's not so strange. I mean, it is a little bit strange to describe Trent as the spin doctor for Liverpool. It's a different definition of the term spin.
To an extent, like, he is a bit of a meat shield sometimes for Liverpool, I think. I think he was used as that last season in the press. I think he was used to define the negatives of Liverpool. And very often I kind of found myself going, yeah, but something's off here. And it was like, no, he's just not trying, because that causes pain. He's not trying and he doesn't care about his position, and Klopp doesn't care. And it's similar in the exit interview for Carvalho from Liverpool. Like, he couldn't resist the whole, you know, did Jurgen give you a message when you're about to leave Liverpool? No, I haven't spoken to Jurgen Klopp. And it's like...
Who's that?
not Roberto Carvalho.
The young lad?
Yeah, Fabio Carvalho.
The Fulham guy?
Yeah.
Has he left?
On loan.
To?
RB.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and he played up to the Klopp hasn't spoken to me.
Yeah, did that old thing. Which is, I mean, sure, that I would love to hear that story. And I'd love to hear that put to Klopp. But I think it's also fairly low down Klopp's
Jesus,
radar.
This is such a good idea. Essentially have, I'm not being funny, 10 clippings from newspapers or magazines criticizing someone and just say, we want to...
What was the deal here? What was the idea there?
Yeah.
I think you're right, actually. Like, I think there's like a real need, there's a real need for that without it being defined as, here's 10 painful moments in your life. How do you define... Because what I'm bored of, and it's this old... It's archetypes, but it's kind of like what we've done. Like, okay, I'm going to have to go back, not back to square one, but like, in order to define archetypes, you need to understand the archetypes. But the problem is, like, once you've siloed the, let's reduce it down to 7 archetypes, because that's easy and that's Jungian and everyone can buy into that, right? Within the archetypes, there are then categories of archetype. So there are subcategories within the 7 categories. The problem is we bought into the 7 categories and very rarely do we go below those 7 categories. So when you're asked to define yourself, you're asked to define yourself with something or in odds at something, and very little is kind of in between. And that's the problem right now is in football is like last season, you know, it was the whole Pep Guardiola has reached the apex. We were still telling the Pep Guardiola story through the archetypes by which we understood him at Barcelona. And I don't know if those still suffice to explain Pep Guardiola. The same with Jurgen Klopp. It's like, hey, his teams aren't as intense as they used to be. And it's like, yeah, like he's not trying to be as intense as he used to be. What's up with you? And then the same with Arteta. It's like, but his team, like it's playing in this way, but he's so calm. And like, this is ahead of time. He's not the kind of person that does things ahead of time because he's got 5 phases to... Do you get what I'm saying? There's like a...
Well, there was the collective... I mean, it shows what circles I run in when I describe the following as a collective national freakout. That might be slightly overselling it for the majority of people going about their lives. When City played back to front against Arsenal, and then, you know, they tried to hit Haaland and Gundogan, and everyone was like, what? City bypassing the midfield?
But it's been done before. It's been defined before during the... Pep did it against Klopp at Bayern.
Do you remember when Brendan Rodgers invented 4-4-2?
And he did invent 4-4-2.
Well, yeah, that was the nice thing about it. And then Guardiola, like 2 years later, invented 4-4-2.
Yeah.
He was like, yeah, it was weird. We like put on Gabriel up next to Sergio. And now we had 2 strikers and there was more in the box. And we were like, yes, Pep. Well done, mate.
But you also remember when, like, so for instance, you know, Liverpool tried to play 4-4-2 and it just didn't work. And so no one spoke about Liverpool playing 4-4-2, but they tried it. It's like, they tried, well, actually, they tried 4-2-4. But like...
Well, the dirty secret is everyone defends in the 4-4-2.
That's not even that dirty anymore. That's the weird thing about it. Like, I feel like... I was trying to define things the other day. I don't know, I'm getting off subject here, but like... I was trying to work out what an actual number 9 was. So it's so interesting when you walked into the office and went, I was trying to work out England number 9. But like, I was trying to define what a number 9 was because I was like, well, what is a number 9 in the modern age? Like, is he a goal scorer? Is it Haaland as number 9? Well, then what's Roberto Firmino?
Well, no, he's a... Yeah, okay. So my definition of a 9, and this is an imperfect definition, is somebody who starts positionally in between the centre-backs. That's a good rule of thumb because players like Firmino...
In their column.
In their column, if you like. Right. And relatively high. So the problem with someone like Bobby Firmino, who's more of a... He's not a 10. He's a... So...
He's a deep 9.
Yeah, but it's a weird language thing because starting nearer the goal and going back to your own goal, it goes 9, 10, false 9. A false 9 is deeper than a 10 in
but
my mind.
Then he's definitely a false 9.
Right, exactly. But the interesting thing about 9s and their evolution is Isak and Newcastle... Because he's like 6'3" or 6'4", quick, strong, and technical. And it used to be pick one or two.
And especially at Newcastle, it was like be Alan Shearer, basically.
I mean, here's a question to put you on the spot.
Yeah.
Prime Chicharito, a Man United,
yeah,
starts for how many Premier League teams?
I don't see him as a million miles away from Nunez.
Nunez can... Well, the thing is, Chicharito was a poacher in my mind.
Sure, he can play up front by himself.
I think he can still play for West Ham.
I don't think he starts for West Ham.
I think you look at Antonio.
Who starts for West Ham?
Antonio. Because you just argue, well, Antonio holds up the ball. He runs the channels.
Yeah, but arguably you could just play Mikel Antonio a little bit deeper.
But do West Ham play two up top? Probably not, because then they're only the wingers. So my contentious statement is I'm saying Chicharito at his prime, give me the Real Madrid on loan Chicharito, starts for three Premier League teams today. And I'm viewing that as a...
Who?
Oh God, take like possibly Forest, unsure.
No, he wouldn't start for Forest. I don't think he starts for us. I think last season he might start for Leicester if Jamie Vardy's not in the team.
Yeah, I like that. He doesn't start for Luton the way they play.
Do you know what would have been interesting? I think he starts for Palace.
I did think about Palace because they've got Elise who sucks. Not Elise. Who's the guy who came from Celtic who plays lots of football for them?
Oh, yeah. Last season, let me just take a look because who do they have? Who is their line?
They had Ayew.
Yeah, so they had Edouard.
He's the one who slightly sucks.
Yeah, who's like, they just didn't like, so all I'm saying is like, listen to Elise, who I think—
He's very good.
He's very good. Eze, obviously, fantastic. Jordan Ayew, could swap him out. Probably not the guy. They've got Decore, they've got Will Hughes.
Like, Palace are jokes because they only signed Crystal Palace players.
Palace, yeah.
When they signed Will Hughes, I was like, yes, of course they did.
Do you remember there was a conversation at one time where Will Hughes could have signed for Liverpool? That might have just been within Liverpool's circles. Anyway, like, that's interesting to me that he would start. I think last season he starts for Leicester, Palace. I can't say this season. Not Fulham, because he wouldn't, but alongside Mitro?
Yeah, but they play wingers.
Fine, just play 4-4-2. Brighton?
Yeah, maybe, because like Evan Ferguson, Brighton's in the main.
Possibly starts for Brighton last season. I don't mind that.
Anyone else?
Lineups-wise, Danny Welbeck started for them. He's not a hookup player. Danny Welbeck was there for the hookup. Possibly last season, I'm only saying it, I think he might start for Manchester United.
Oh, yeah.
Because when they got up front was so box-based, it could have been like a little 1-2 get on the end of this kind of thing.
If Martial could get in, I could get in. And if I could get in, there's that chance. If the Neville's could play for England, so could I.
I mean, that's not untrue.
And that's untrue. Probably true here.
But it brings up this whole conversation around judging people within the context within which they're played, but also judging people within the context of the pieces that they have. And it kind of brings us onto this conversation of a half-hour introduction of Chelsea. Chelsea yes. are a fascinating prospect, right? And after this, we're going to talk why, and I want to put it in these terms, Pochettino's a problem.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
And I mean this in like the most kind of Twittery, YouTubey terms, where they tweet like, "Hey, you'll remember why X is a problem," and it's like, "Oh yeah, Pochettino." I think the concern, the questions, everything around Pochettino that we thought, you know, he was quite fixed in this and that. This was quite limiting. Can he really do this? Can he really do that? He's already answering some of these questions with what was an incredibly deep squad at Chelsea, and you know, I made a whole profile. It wasn't a documentary. I made a whole profile on Mauricio Pochettino while he was at Spurs. And he ticks, in terms of personality traits, every trait that you would want as a Chelsea fan. I can't think of a trait that he doesn't. Maybe he needs to be a little bit more showy. possibly a little bit more of a playman.
Is he enough of a prick?
Yeah. Mauricio Pochettino, I think. You know the problem with Mauricio Pochettino? And this is the issue with Chelsea. They need them to be showy pricks. So they need them. They need you to go, nah, look, I'm a prick. I think with his, he's got machismo. He's got an incredibly, for want of a better word, masculine quality, which is about, basically, I'm the top dog. And if you don't like it, off you pop. Same as Ange Postecoglou, same as Klopp, same as Pep, same as any of these guys. He will small man you in the first training session. And you can tell the players have gotten invested in this.
This is going to age badly. I don't think it's impossible that Chelsea win the league.
I completely agree. And now I want you to define the terms as to why. Because I've got like 10 different reasons why. And I'm obsessed with Pochettino. So my gaydar went off for him the second he went to Chelsea. I was like, oh, you're going to be a problem. And I didn't like it because I don't want them to do well with Poch, because Poch is lovely and they do not deserve that.
Well, listen, let's define good. I mean, I don't think he could get more than 85 points, right? I think that's very difficult. But
do you mean based on Poch or based on Chelsea?
Based on how difficult it is to get 85 points. I don't see...
Arsenal didn't even get 85 points.
That's what I mean. So I think 85 is like an absolute ceiling. So what you're really doing is relying on City not to get 97.
But City didn't need to get... So I don't think City...
That's my point. I don't think they're going to do it this year. Like, they're probably going to win the league. But the difficulty is, after you win the treble, they're going to be asleep till Christmas, as they always are.
Mm-hmm.
But also there's lots of change. Like, you look at players like... Mahrez, potentially gone. Bernardo Silva.
Bernardo Silva wants out. Kyle Walker wants out.
Cancelo's gone.
Another centre back who, yeah, Cancelo played in a lot of their pre-seasons. Did he? Yeah, I think he did.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. They've got another centre back who they're going to sell off.
Laporte.
Yeah, like Laporte's like starts for every other top four side.
I know. So the thing is,
By the way, Laporte to Newcastle.
Jesus, that makes a lot of sense for everyone.
For everyone.
Would City sell him to Newcastle?
No, of course not.
Are they worried that he'd be a problem for Newcastle? Maybe.
I think they just do it. I think they're probably going to get the most money for Laporte if they sell him to another Premier League team.
Do they need, because Newcastle have Botman and Shaw.
And yeah, bro, Laporte starts over Shaw.
That's the point, right? And is Botman right side or left side? I don't know, I need to look it up. But in any case, like, the fact he's a left-sided centre-half, especially because in pre-season... Eddie Howe has been playing with three at the back. Oh, I mean,
left-sided centre-backs are a premium.
Well, this is my whole thing about Tyrone Mings. And
that was the last name I expected to hear then. Because, by the way, Tyrone Mings is incredibly maligned in terms of like the Gerrard era. Like, so Gerrard's big scalp when he came in at Villa was Mings. And I think the Gerrard era completely changes if he takes another scalp. If he gets Mings onside and takes another scalp, he's still there.
The thing with Tyrone Mings is, and this is the only time I'm going to compare myself with the 6'4", good-looking Premier League centre-half. Every time I play football, I play at the back. Without even explicitly making mistakes, which of course I do lots of, I'm always at the crime scene. Like, a goal goes in and I'm sort of looking there slightly sheepish, like in the, it's not obvious what my mistake was, but it looks like there was one probably. Tyrone Mings has that unfortunate quality.
Right, yeah.
But he's always looking a little bit hands on hips and everyone at the whole tent is thinking.
And he's always in the background of the shots of the players running away. Like, that's kind of like a directorial thing where it's like, get Mings in the background.
Yeah.
He's always there going, like he's just done the rumba on, Come Dance With Me.
And me and him share that, and it doesn't feel good. And I think Gerrard, as an aesthetic, kind of identified that and went, yeah, you just don't fill me with confidence as a viewer.
I also just think if there'd have been another centre-back in there that worked and he hadn't had his main centre-back get injured, then I think he's fine. And also broadly, he's not fine because the rest of the squad love Tyrone Mings, and that's a huge problem. Like, you can't take the wrong personalities. Gerrard got AVB'd. And here's my thing is, I don't think Poch is going to get AVB'd. I think Mauricio Pochettino had all of the qualities that Chelsea fans would have gone, you're the new Andre Villas-Boas. We don't know enough about what you want because we don't know what you say. We don't know enough about your personality. You're not Mauricio Pochettino, all these kind of things. What he's done is he's instantly instilled an identity within this Chelsea side, which is I mean, A, it's at odds with everything that happened last season, but B, tactically it works.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is his time at PSG, even though he got sacked and didn't win the Champions League and all the rest.
And he only won the league once out of two seasons.
Which is actually on some levels a disgrace. It hasn't mattered. What it's done is proven that he can manage A, a very big club, and B, the one club in Europe probably more toxic than Chelsea. Like he's got his big ego credentials with Messi, Neymar, Mbappe, Verratti, Marquinhos, and it hasn't even mattered that he didn't do that well there, because when a manager fails to do well at PSG, it's very hard to not look at the structure of the club and go, well, give him a chance with, like, turn down the circus music for 1 second so the man can hear himself think. But
I get that.
Yes, I actually think, I don't know that without the PSG job, he gets the Chelsea job.
I totally get that. Because also it just puts some distance between him and everything else that's going on there. But I love, like, even if I just look at their preseason against Fulham, like, I love what they're doing here. They've got Kepa, who is now Poch might be the first manager who knows what to do with Kepa.
Did you see the clip? It's related but unrelated, of Brighton kicking off against Newcastle.
Yeah, and what, and beating their press. And everyone's like, that's...
They were playing... De Zerbi is doing side quests.
De Zerbi ball.
He's like, how insane aesthetically can we make the opening 30 seconds of a football match look?
Yeah, it's like a weird one, isn't it? Because it's incredibly positionalist. So it's so positionalist.
The most, more than Pep.
Yeah. Well, in that phase of play. And even then when they get up the field.
Particularly at the back.
Yeah, because all the passes almost rely on the players being where they need to be.
Yeah, I mean, Tifo IRL did a brilliant video on why do Brighton put their studs on the ball.
Oh yeah, I do remember. That was a really good video.
They're the only ones who do it. Truly, they're the only ones who do it. Because their whole thing is, come get it.
Van Dijk does do that every now and again, but it's not like a Liverpool thing, that's a Van Dijk thing.
No, it's a Van Dijk being cool and good-looking thing. Well, Colwell did it because he was at Brighton.
Shit.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck, it's gone full circle.
I know, I wouldn't be surprised if De Zerbi was like, I'm not going to try the De Zerbi voice.
No, don't do the De Zerbi.
God, he's so elite. Like, I'm not trying to be reactionary to the fact he did well last year. Like, I just love how obsessed with stupid... Like, it's so over the top to be as positional as he is, and it makes him so much fun to watch.
Is it almost distracting slightly for the players in a sense? So it kind of takes away some of the... Like, it takes away some of the pressure because De Zerbi ball is so De Zerbi that it's like, hey, just play the ball. Play what I need you to do. And to an extent, that is where he's, like, similar to Poch. Like, Poch is... His build-up and all of those things, he's so structural in the way that he does things. And yet there is so much talent, which is so good at working on the ball in that moment and judging where the game is at. So I think Santos is going to have a breakout season for Chelsea this season alongside Fernandes. What a combination. Sterling looks fantastic in preseason. Chukwuemeka looks good in preseason. And Nkunku looks fantastic in preseason.
Jackson up top is looking
Jackson,
very spicy.
Really spicy up front for them. I think there's like a series of just really, I mean, I can just name a series of players who last season you would have gone, did they have the best
Sterling
season?
Could be a new signing.
Sterling, yeah. I mean, that's what's weird about it. But even then you've got Shalaba, Gallagher. Gallagher is probably going to go, but he looked pretty good. Cucurella is like a new signing. I'm not even kidding. Levi Colwill is basically a new signing, but is a new signing that has already proven himself in the Premier League. Mattsson from the academy, fantastic. Jackson, he is a new signing. He's fantastic. Like Lewis Hall was playing in midfield for Chelsea against Fulham. By the way, this Fulham side's not a slouch team. I know they're out of Mitrovic, but they're no slouch. Like they've still got a lot of their starters. Chelsea didn't wipe the floor with them. Then there were a lot of gaps at the back, especially on that right-hand side. But those are all things that can be dealt with. Those are all things that can change. And the fact is, like, Thiago Silva's still playing back there.
You know something? Like, that Chelsea team are ripe for someone to come in and just with, like, the certainty of having done it a couple of times before at a very high level come in. And this is why Graham Potter, who I'm a huge fan of...
Should have been kept.
Well... it's an interesting one. He never should have been appointed because essentially he's a nice guy.
Not at that point. He shouldn't have been appointed at that point. Like, I feel if you go through this terrible dip and they'd have appointed Lampard instead of...
Potter initially.
Potter. You rough it through this time. You firm it. And then you get to this point and you go, hello, Graham.
But you know, even then, like, I've pulled pints before in hospitality at Brighton's grounds.
At the Amex?
Yeah.
Wow.
As a, just doing agency work. And you go there and the head of hospitality says, hey, how's it going? How's it? Like, they're all too nice in Brighton. Mm. Like, I've never done any work at Stamford Bridge, but I imagine if I did, they'd slap you in the face and say, is that a ring? And then not pay you for 6 months and then sue you. And I don't know whether Graham Potter would have ever fitted in the Chelsea, regardless of when he took over.
I also feel like he just took over at the worst time. He just took over at a time where he just wasn't meant to take over.
I mean, he did not have a chance.
Yeah, he was basically, weirdly, like, I don't know if this is what Todd Bowley meant to make him, but he was like a sacrificial lamb of sorts at Chelsea for Bowley, though. And like, weirdly, you can imagine that, I don't know, the players will have like bonded around the fact that they
used to take the piss out of like Potter, so he was like Harry or something. There was some like unfunny footballer chat around his name.
Yeah, absolutely unfunny.
And the changing room was, they had to expand and...
Yeah. Because they also had a bloated squad, which essentially they still do, which I think is kind of like a nice sword of Damocles over a lot of players' heads, where it's sort of like, oh, you don't do what we want to do. That on the transfer block.
You know what's interesting? I watched Oppenheimer yesterday and it's all about the atomic bomb.
Mm.
They could have
is
saved,
it?
It happens to be. They could have saved a lot of money and just got Conte to manage that side. What? And just watch the explosion.
Right, I love that.
They could have just done a press conference with Conte.
And just filmed the outcome.
Just filmed the outcome with him managing that squad.
I think that this season, you're right, Chelsea are going to be the dark horses.
How predictable is that, though? That they are so boom and bust. They're like a teenager who... I don't know, is like trying to get a girlfriend and then everything is moody, and then they do get a girlfriend and they're happy, then they break up and then they're moody. Chelsea are the only team who could finish 10th and then first.
That's so true.
And they do it all the time. Like, Chelsea's model is essentially...
moody teenager.
Yeah, they're like this, and I think we've discussed this before on the pod, in the context of Jose. Jose created this whole like, we want to love our manager and fall in love with him and then break up.
I get that.
They're so moody and teenagery and boom and bust. And like, there's no other club like them, really. Like, they look at Arsenal and the consistency and they go, that's kind of nice. You know, they look at the married couple and think, I would quite like that. But then they're out in the club doing a line. That's essentially Chelsea wow. Football Club.
I totally love that as an analogy. It works perfectly. And I guess that's where this season it works well for them. And then after a while, they get a little bit bored. The Poch thing is like, oh, you are the solid choice, but I should have met you a decade later.
There's no world in which Chelsea don't lose to a Pochettino team in the Europa League final in 3 years. That's already in the diary. Like, he's already gone there, done well, got sacked, taken over Real Betis, done well, and Rafa Benitez or something at Chelsea. It's already happened. Like, we can actually look at who's hosting the Europa League final in 3 years.
And just date it up.
Date it up and say Poch is in the opposite. It's like, you know, like, I was convinced for years that Bellerin and Arteta... we're going to win the Europa League together in like 2 years' time.
Right.
Like, Real Betis.
A million miles away from.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, Arteta gets the Barcelona job. Bellerin is still there, I want to say, or maybe he's been released again.
Where is he now? I feel like he's not there anymore.
But it's only Chelsea who you can say, upon the manager joining, they'll be against him into an off-season.
You know, the funny thing about it is, like, the weird thing about Poch, I think he's got weird staying power. Because he's just so, there is a gravitas and a silence and he is so real. He's so present.
You can touch him. He's a human being.
Yeah. He's so accessible in that sense. But there's a lot of inaccessible elements to him that I really love. And I think that's like, he's got this perfect distance from all the parties that he's involved with. But he looks like a Chelsea manager already.
Like, he's also got the Bielsa thing like in the background. Like,
yeah,
Bielsa and him have been...
There's an unknowable quality to Bielsa, but there's an unknowable quality to Poch. They both have kind of eyes that are so rich with emotion and at the same time, not dead.
Not dead to the world, but like cold or removed. Have you ever seen Better Call Saul?
Yes.
There's a scene where Lalo, and for context to listeners who haven't seen it, he's one of the essentially like cartel members.
Yes.
Has survived a mass shooting and he needs to find a body to fool everyone into thinking he was killed. So he goes to the local town and he's charming and sweet to the, you know, an old fat friend of the family, and they're joking, and then he thinks, okay, well, I need to kill this dude. And in his eyes, there's this emotion and a sweetness, but also you can tell there's an edge.
And that's what it is with Poch. Actually, that is kind of clear with Poch. Like, I think he knows he has to dead some of these players or move them on. He also knows that football is, and this industry in particular, is incredibly harsh. So that's part of the issue, I guess.
Him taking the Chelsea job is in some ways a demonstration of that.
Because previously he had turned down the Barcelona job based on the fact that he had already been with Espanyol.
Wow, I didn't... Oh, yes. Although Espanyol, I guess, are his club in the way Spurs aren't. He loves Spurs, but Espanyol, he's Mr...
It made me think, though, that, you know, that he wouldn't take the Chelsea job, but he did.
It's interesting that he's Espanyol because he's Argentinian. I don't know how Argentinians feel about Spain.
Just being called Spain. Has he played for a team where it was Spain?
Well, yeah, I mean, Espanyol obviously have... They are the Castilian outpost.
Yeah, exactly. It works, though. I mean, yeah,
I saw an article, this is slightly an aside point, where this journalist flew out to watch all four Madrid teams at home in the weekend.
Oh, that's cool.
Really cool. Atletico, Real, Rayo Vallecano, and one more. So Rayo Vallecano are the really fun ones with the manual scoreboard who Falcao played for.
La Liga.
Madrid sides. I want to beat your Google. Atletico, Rayo Vallecano, Real Madrid, and
is it? No, it's not Deportivo.
Mm-mm.
Who else is it? Team. I'm just going to put teams from Madrid.
Jamie, pull that shit up.
Vallecano. It didn't really come back with anything else, if I'm completely honest.
Google, I watched all four Madrid teams in the weekend.
All four Madrid teams. La Liga side, Gareth Bale running. Past and present Real Madrid teams.
Okay, we'll have to let this one be a quiz for the listeners. Who was the fourth team in Madrid?
Can I put La Liga map? La Liga map. Here we go. All the teams are... They're all like piled up in one map. Oh, you can't, because look, it's just on top of Madrid, but surely there's just a... here we go. Wait.
Currently Googling into Algeria.
Okay. No, get off. Getafe.
Getafe.
Right.
Yeah.
And Leganes.
See, that was Arthur's all about tension and release.
Yeah, except there was no tension and the release was incredibly late. It's like,
I didn't say it was good art.
Right, okay, good point. There's a lot of teams around Madrid. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I went to go watch football in Mongolia. And
sorry, what? That's cool.
Yeah, it was awesome.
We should make that into a video.
Well, this as a side note, there's this person on YouTube. Really, she does amazing content, but she just goes and watches games.
Oh, you mean Stumpeg?
Yeah, I do. And I discovered her like last week.
She's amazing.
She's awesome. And
I went to Marseille with her. Not with her specifically, obviously my wife listens, but you know, I went with a group and she was the other person of the English delegates. And
what was the context?
BT Sport had Ligue 1 rights, or as they call it at the time, Uber Eats Ligue 1, Uber Eats app.
Ligue 1 sucks. Uber Eats being their sponsor sums up how I feel about it.
Careful.
Sorry, everyone, it's true.
And we flew into Nice Stumpeg or Neve, as she's known, was the other person who was English. And obviously, you know, when everyone's going around together, people end up going, people just all end up chatting in a big group. She's lovely. She's very talented. Obviously, phenomenally younger than I am, I think by over a decade, and probably puts me to shame in terms of what I make. But like super talented. But anyway, sorry.
Well, yeah, she basically, from what I understand, her main content is she records herself at games.
Going to games.
Yeah. And it's super, anyway, so I went to Mongolia to watch a game at Power Plant 5 because they're post-Soviet. So things are still organized administratively in power plants.
How much did it cost to fly to Mongolia?
It couldn't have been a fortune because I funded it by handing out flyers for 3 weeks before.
You told me this story before. Go on.
In any case, I went to Power Plant 5 to watch a local game. Now, I think all teams but one play on the same pitch in Ulaanbaatar, the capital.
I like that.
And the reason we chose this game was because one of the goalkeepers is American. And we thought, that's kind of quirky. Why is he, what's an American doing in Mongolia? So we went down and...
£600 return. Not bad.
No, that's what I mean. It's not terrible. Via Moscow, which I assume
is
a harder flight. Yeah. Which is a harder flight now. And then anyway, we go to this game.
You have to fly via Moscow?
Oh yeah.
Shit.
And the first voice we heard was a South London voice going, because I was wearing my Wimbledon scarf. AFC Wimbledon, oh, I used to play against them. I thought, God, it's a small world.
Who was it?
It was just some lads who used to play for Hampton and Richmond Borough.
Oh, that's cool.
And it was like, he's a coach out here. Anyway, we got chatting briefly to the American goalkeeper at the end of the game. His bio is he's played in the Armenian second tier.
Oh, he's this guy. Yeah.
Read, where's he been?
Oh, no, I didn't look it up, but I just know who you mean.
Oh, right.
I don't remember what his name is.
You might have to type in American goalkeeper, Mongolia.
American goalkeeper, Mongolian.
I'm assuming that's going to get us there, unless there's a whole bunch.
Is it Austin Rogers?
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. No, it's not.
It could be a son.
No, it is. Sorry, it is.
Check. If you look at some of the names.
He's 27. He's played at Kitsap Pumas. He's played in Mongolia. He's played in Mongolia. He's played in Romania. He's played in Portland. He played for a team called Puke. Or as I imagine it's called Puke, which is an Albanian team. Detroit. Kosovo. He's played for Vushtre, which is where my wife's family are from. Bizarrely. So I kind of want to meet this guy.
Should we get him on the pod?
Yeah, we actually should. Like, should we just reach out to this guy? I feel like I kind of want to... We should actually get him on as...
I mean, in our intro messages, hey, I actually saw you play at Power Plant 5.
But he's never played for Power Plant 5.
No. Power Plant 5 is the English translation of the ground.
What would it be? So
you'd have to click on... So where was he playing in 2018?
2018, he was playing for Ulaanbaatar City.
Okay, so you click on Ulaanbaatar City.
Suddenly, this is all lining up. The story checks out.
Yeah, okay. Passing the investigation and then check where they play their home games.
At Mongolian Premier League license of stadium, the MFF Football Centre.
Right, and
if you click that, then that will be near Power Plant 5.
Yeah, if you then stick that into Google Maps, this is a full deep dive.
Okay, I'm clicking on the map. Okay, if I zoom in or out of the map, is there like some form of... Power Plant 5, gone. So where's the power plant? So Poindexter.
I know, I feel like a massive Poindexter. I'm going to say that's the power plant.
That's the pitch. No, wait. What is that? We need to look up this address because, what great radio.
One of the interesting things about Mongolia is that they don't really do street numbers. So they do...
What do they do?
They do notable locations. So like we're in East London at the minute.
Yeah, so you go, oh, London Fields.
Exactly.
Right.
And the other interesting note for anyone...
A lot of mail must go missing.
Well, I see, I hadn't worked that bit out. The other interesting detail, is if you're wanting a cab, you put your thumb out, you know how many cab drivers there are?
Thousands.
Anyone who's driving. There's a set price for mileage and the done thing is just anyone who's going that direction will pull over and say, where are you going? Jump in.
I didn't realize how far away Mongolia was. I thought Mongolia was way closer.
It's a wee while, yeah.
That's an understatement.
It's a long way to go watch Premier League football.
Kazakhstan, yeah. Really cool place to go watch football though.
Like, I mean, I have to square the circle here. We went for a month, we saw only one game of football.
We need to go back, Jamie.
No, but I mean, this is the thing, Lawrence. Let's monetize this pod and then stick all the cash back into flights to Mongolia.
On red. We could take 4 flights for that. I get what you're saying. Okay, so the pod's got away from us a little, but I get your point.
Yeah, but isn't it nice to have an open, chatty conversation as a...
Nah.
No, perfect.
No, I'm going to... Yeah, the problem is... they also have a national amusement park nearby. Did you go to that? It looks a bit like a crap Disneyland. A good Disneyland.
We went to the Museum of Games and...
What's the language in Mongolia?
It is essentially... It's Mongolian, but it's essentially Russian.
Right. There's also a place called Wrestling Palace, which I'm hoping they've got wrestling.
Yeah, so sumo wrestling is their big thing. And
I have no idea about anything to do with Mongolia.
The president of, well, so one, they don't have antagonistic politics. The politicians, like, they don't really like insult each other. It's kind of, we're all on the same team. And the current-
an alien concept.
A totally alien concept. And the other alien concept was, in the same way we have like, well, Donald Trump used to be a famous TV personality.
Right.
Their president, at least when we were there, was a former sumo wrestler. So that. So their celebrities turned politicians.
Right.
Are contextual.
I mean, genius, and at the same time, probably open to a lot of terrible things happening. But, you know, if what we don't know, we don't know. I'm not saying, therefore, the people are corrupt. I'm just saying, like, you know, is a sumo wrestler the most qualified person to run your system? I don't know. But maybe. I mean, you know, Nixon.
Look, I mean, the interesting thing, and I hope this conversation is, in its clunky way, inspiring this, go watch football in strange places.
Absolutely. I completely agree. And in fact, for that exact reason, I think going to East London, I meant Reagan, I didn't mean Nixon, would be ideal. Because a strange place next season to watch good football, you won't have seen it before, would be West London. You won't have seen it for a while over there. I mean, towards the end of the Tuchel era, I don't quite get why the wheels came off. Tuchel was still a good manager. Essentially, it was just that his relationships with the players had degraded to such a degree. I don't know if, like, did that happen at the end of the Spurs era? With Spurs? With Poch?
No.
Why not? I think it did, you know.
It got stale without being antagonistic.
Did we ever put a finger on why it broke down? I mean, those guys won the semi-final of the Champions League and then went on to basically not challenge Liverpool in the final. And then what, Poch got blamed for that?
No, I think, you know, like the principle of all competitive anything, sports, business, whatever, is that every 3 years you need to change something because the message gets stale. That was Ferguson's view, at least.
Do you know what they should have done? And this is a really hot take. Should have sold Kane.
Right, just mix it up.
Not even just to mix it up. I feel like you would have got a load of value for him. Maybe it was pre the time where you would have got like 100 mil for him. But if you'd have said at that point, no, we want to sell Harry Kane 80 now, million. You would have got 80 mil, which would have bought you whatever Poch needed.
Roberto Soldado.
I feel like given the purse strings, Poch is going to bring in some smart players. Like weirdly, they've just bought in another centre back from Monaco, like just because they need to.
Yeah, I think the point is, with the Spurs Poch thing, I think messages get stale and they didn't change enough. I mean, I went to, and maybe you did as well if we've had this conversation before, Spurs 0, Newcastle 1. Spurs 0? Nil. Where, in any case, they just failed to break down. Joe Linton scored his one and only Premier League goal that season. And they just failed to break down a very bad Steve Bruce team. And it was obvious to everyone watching the third game the message was no longer working.
Which I guess is frustrating because now, also now he's back at Chelsea, he's showing that he's got the know-how and the smarts to do the things he needs to do. Like he's doing that back three, he's weirdly making a box midfield like out of, with Chilwell up front, or like Chilwell sort of pushes in from the left.
Like
Liverpool are kind of doing the same thing with Robertson.
I think one of the mysteries of football to me has always been how not very good sides can play 4-5-1 and get results at top teams. And it's not a mystery because of the difference in terms of quality of player. It's a mystery because if you're a top side, you have 19 home games and 15 of them are going to have that character.
Right.
And half of the away games too. So you would have thought maybe we'll work it out. But you know, every time City play a team like Palace and they win, Guardiola looks exhausted and goes, you have no idea how hard it is to play against a team with 10 behind the ball. So there is just something inherent about that challenge.
Mm. I think Chelsea are going to be an interesting prospect this season. I think a lot of people are going to play them a lot more open than they should.
Exactly.
And they won't underestimate them. But I feel like that there's some scalps there for the take. Liverpool played them on the opening game of the season. I think that's a coin flip.
It's a tough start.
For both Liverpool and Chelsea.
More for Liverpool, I'd say. I think Chelsea are going to, if first day of the season, they're always good.
Right.
And Liverpool.
Although they lost to Wigan once. That was like a really famous Premier League.
Chelsea.
Yeah. Yeah,
I remember them beating Wigan 2-1 in the last minute with Drogba dinking the keeper left-footed with a cross shot.
Yeah, but the opening day of the season, they lost to not Giovanni Dos Santos, but like...
That's Hull.
No, it's not. Yeah, that's not what I'm saying, though. There is a Wigan result. I'm just going to put in Wigan beat Chelsea. I think it works. Wigan beat Chelsea. How far
any,
back do
any concert, any fans of the 2006-07 title race will remember Emil Heskey's late Wigan goal at Stamford Bridge?
Some era. That really was some era.
Yeah, yeah.
You see what I'm saying? 2013, where's the, like, early on?
Wigan also lost 4-0 at home to Blackpool on the first day of the season.
She can't find the last Wigan win against Chelsea, so maybe they didn't. Oh, there was a 3-1 one, but that's not the one I'm talking about. Maybe my I'm suffering from some sort of Mandela effect. So, yeah, I guess what I'm saying is Poch is the perfect combo with someone, an owner like Todd Bowley. He is sincere. He is methodological. He is able to execute a very clear message, which clearly players have not had very recently. And also now he's kind of at odds with Lampard. I think all these signs point to a top four for Chelsea. Minimum.
Yeah, and look, there's the existential question of will there be any good? That's a new manager, new players, new tactics.
Already they are. Their preseason is actually like really positive, isn't
but
it?
Exactly. But the preseason seems to have answered those. So I think the takeaway messages for anyone making notes is Chelsea will be good. Go watch football. Somewhere interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, let me just see more of these matches. Like, look at Chelsea's preseason. Where is it? Where even is it? They've got Dortmund on August 3rd. Wow, that's a good one.
You just beat United.
Yes, although United really didn't put away a lot of their chances, and Harry Maguire played in that team. Do you see Onana shouting at Harry Maguire?
Onana's such a weird dude. He got himself retired from Cameroon duty because he was like, we must play from the back. And the manager was like, no. And he was like, yeah, no, but I do this at Ajax. I used to do this. And he goes, I don't care. We're Cameroon. We play differently to Ajax. He goes, okay, I'll just retire from international duty then.
I kind of rate that. But also at the same time, I'm like, are you all right, mate?
He's just a weird dude. It's awesome to see.
Yeah. I like people who, what?
Just before we finish up, by the way, Arsenal in Ferreira, which is totally bizarre. Is that competition for Ramsdale?
Competition or long-term replacement for Ramsdale?
Ramsdale was one of the best keepers in the league and he's like 24.
That's not the point. You don't get to just, I get it. Like, what's weird about it is there's other positions they could upgrade in to upset Ramsdale. I don't want to say it's like a bad move to do this, but it's kind of like late to do it as well, if that makes sense.
Bizarre.
Like, if you're in Ferreira, go in Ferreira on the 30th of June or something. Do you know what I mean?
But he's also older than Ramsdale.
Not now?
He's also older than Ramsdale.
Yeah, I get that, but goalkeepers have longer lives.
But it's not exactly like Ramsdale's getting on is the point, so we need to replace him.
But maybe Raya, like, weirdly, I guess as a goalkeeper, there's kind of like a minimum bar, right? Where it's just like, yeah, you can save some shots. And then it's about distribution. Last season, people really fawned over the distribution of Ramsdale, right?
But and then Raya as well, I guess. But it's bizarre.
But then Alisson's got good distribution. Like, Ederson has great distribution. But you really see the difference with someone like Onana over David De Gea. And maybe you'd see the difference if you felt like Raya could play as part of that back four in terms of game dominance for Arsenal. Maybe that's the next level of it, where it's like, If players such as, maybe not Zinchenko, but Timber, or because they've both got inverted fullbacks now on both sides, maybe they could play it out and sort of...
Yeah, I mean, the other interesting model is maybe Ramsdale plays the games where they're expecting to concede more shots.
You can't do that to a goalkeeper. You can't go, like, be good for the... Like, goalkeepers don't operate in that way, I don't think.
Like, I'm feeling defensive about it because Ramsdale is the best player to ever play for Wimbledon.
Right.
And a lovely guy, and it's bizarre. Maybe they've just seen value there.
Maybe you could get him back.
Don't it's joke.
A
joke.
Where else would he go in that? Here's a real question is, I think goalkeepers, there is an element of Joe Hart to any goalkeeper who gets replaced.
Mm-hmm.
Because ultimately, like, you don't get a chance at redemption very often. Almost ever. Like, you know, Joe Hart got replaced at City by Bravo. Bravo didn't exactly set the world alight, but Joe Hart went to Italy and just got picked apart. By the way, he got picked apart because people kept, they knew that his left side was weak.
So yeah,
they
it was the low shots from the edge of the box to his left.
Yeah, and Italy is so tactical and also so hating of the English that it was basically the worst league to go to because it was like, oh, the English guy comes in, let's show him. And also he came from Man City.
He went to Burnley and they had five good goalkeepers, Burnley at the time.
Yeah.
The five-a-side team. I think it was something like Nick Pope, Tom Heaton, Joe Hart, Anders Lindegaard, who was a former Man United.
One more. Someone big.
Some listeners are screaming out here. That fifth goalkeeper escapes me.
Damn it. It must be Ben Foster. It isn't. It might be another Ben, though.
Who was that fifth goalkeeper for Burnley?
Did you say Heaton?
It was Heaton. It was Pope. It was Lindegaard. It was Hart.
Is it the guy who's now the replacement goalkeeper? Is it Fraser Forster? No, it's not.
It's almost Fraser Forster.
For some weird reason, I can see Fraser Forster in my head. I don't know why. It's not. That would be a weird. That would be a weird stable of goalkeepers.
It was a stable. It was big enough to be a stable. Fraser Forster. This is a weird thing. At university, was this like great subject of debate after a few drinks of is he good looking? We were just like no one could work it out. Half the room was like, yeah, he's so fit, and the other half were like, I don't see it.
Fraser Forster is like saying Thanos is good looking because he has a good jaw.
He's also like 6'6" and Geordie. It's like depends what you're into.
Yeah. See. So I think there's like an interesting element to where Chelsea are going with it all in terms of like, obviously Poch is now using Kepa as a distribution angle, and but also like, it's not even about distribution anymore for goalkeepers. It's about fitting into the system and just pushing the whole system down the field. Does Rea do that so much better than Ramsdale?
I think he does it better.
What I always wonder about is how much can you not retrain a goalkeeper? A goalkeeper's so set in their ways that you go, we need you to kick the ball and do this a little higher up. And he goes, whoa, 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 whoa.
Possibly they can do it, but if they do it with mistakes, obviously the role of the goalkeeper is your mistakes get punished. So
also, by the way, goalkeeper's a big roll of the dice to get rid of a goalkeeper that's already pretty solid. So like you really need to be sure that this goalkeeper is an upgrade because, you know, so for instance, United kept hold of De Gea for so many years because it was like, well, who's better than De Gea?
And anyone would be a risk. I mean, the interesting question about Ramsdale is, I mean, they could sell them for 70 mil, probably.
To who, though?
Well, no one really needs a goalkeeper unless, and this is edgy, it's not this season, but like Newcastle United, Nick Pope. Nick Pope's 32 or something.
Is he?
I mean, am I making that up or is he even older?
No, I don't get what you mean.
Could he be 29/32?
He's 31, yeah.
Yeah.
He doesn't, the problem with Nick Pope is he looks 18.
Yeah, there was a list on Twitter of the most and least 29-year-olds,
yeah,
where Josh McEachran was the least 29-year-old.
Wow.
But Yannick Carrasco was the most 29-year-old.
I love that. But Nick Pope, I get that.
Ramsdale, you've heard it here first.
Newcastle are not going to spend 70 million on a goalkeeper because that's not the place where they most need that money right now. I think from this season onwards, we're going to see, because also once you see people under Champions League lights, it's like when you wake up to a person the morning after you met them in a club.
Or in the club when the lights go on at 3 a.m.
Yeah, and you go, maybe we'll go for breakfast. And you know what I mean? Like there's like that point where you basically, the Champions League is like, I don't know, it's like a litmus test. You put the goalkeeper in and if he comes back out and he stays neutral, that's almost a good thing.
Yeah, it's like Dan Burn, who's been unbelievable, versus Di Maria next season maybe.
Right. Benfica. Now there might be an incredible element to that, but the Champions League is like, if you're Newcastle, you don't want to be that, what was that side that was like punching up Sheriff or whatever it was a few seasons ago. Do you remember them? You don't want to be portrayed as Sheriff. You because that gives you the wrong brand deals. It brings in the wrong kind of eyes. You want to be portrayed as, they're back. You don't want to be portrayed as, plucky underdogs. So you want Nick Pope to look comfortable in that space. You want Dan Burn to look comfortable in that space.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to seeing the draw because, I mean, those, like, you know, they'll be pot four, presumably Newcastle. So they're guaranteed pot one and pot two and pot three. Which means, who knows, Bayern Munich at St. James's
Park. Guaranteed one big name. And it's not an English name, which is even better. So there's a lot of...
Can you imagine Madrid Town Square if they get Atletico?
Ooh, I don't want Atletico though. I think Atletico is a bit of an anticlimax.
Slightly defensive and stodgy.
Just slightly boring. This is also, by the way, where it sort of gets a bit nasty from now on when you have... where are Newcastle in terms of pots? I don't even see Newcastle in terms of pots. Oh, maybe because it was written so late. The pot, is this the right page for this season? 2023? Yeah, it is. Here's the pot. Pot one. Here's who they could end up with against. They can't end up against Man City, so table that.
So what's worst case scenario?
Worst case scenario?
In terms of the football.
Well, let's go through all the names and then you can tell me what the worst case scenario is. Because I think the first three pots are basically decided and then pot four because there's still some teams to play. Newcastle might have to go through like one qualifying match or something.
I don't think so. No, they won't because they finished third.
Sorry, the last two pots have vacancies that will be filled after the qualifying rounds are complete, which means Sociedad, Celtic, Newcastle, the only already qualified teams. Right, okay. So, Man City, Sevilla, so obviously they can't play Man City. Sevilla, Barcelona, Napoli, Bayern Munich, PSG, Benfica, Feyenoord. Worst case scenario... Do you mean worst case in terms of like power teams they get?
Yeah,
or in like, terms of like teams you don't want? Because if you're Newcastle,
Sevilla
you don't want Sevilla.
No,
you also don't want Benfica. You also don't want Feyenoord. You basically want Munich, Naples, Barcelona. One of those three.
Not even Naples. I think you really want...
Not Naples. You're right. Probably not Naples.
Probably
I'm just
want
thinking,
Barcelona.
Yeah. And you don't want Bayern. Bayern set up an interesting one though, because they're kind of like Barcelona have got this whole underdog thing. If you beat Bayern in Europe, you kind of become an equal. If you beat Barcelona, you're not a bad guy, but you're not a good guy. Does that make sense?
It does make sense.
Pot two.
Real Madrid.
But the thing is, that's
you
why
you're... Real and Barca, so you need to get Bayern.
Yeah.
No, let's go PSG and Real Madrid.
PSG, Real Madrid. They can't play Man United. So Inter, Dortmund. Dortmund's an interesting one. They want Real Madrid from pot two. But Atletico Madrid, Leipzig, Porto, Arsenal, they can't play Arsenal.
So let's have PSG, Real Madrid, Newcastle. Oh no, sorry, Newcastle will be pot four.
Newcastle will be pot four. And then here's what pot three is when this article was written. I think some more people may have qualified since. Shakhtar, don't mind that, but don't like it. Don't want to play anyone political because you don't want to be the bad guys. You don't want to be Putin. Salzburg, bit nothing. AC Milan, Lazio, or, and here's an interesting one, Red Star Belgrade. So what you get is the difficulty of PSG and Real Madrid.
And 3 points and the vibes.
Correct, 3 points and vibes. By the way, 3 points not guaranteed away at Red Star Belgrade.
Lots of good sides have lost
there. Horrible, yeah, like Liverpool really struggled there a couple of seasons ago. In fact, I think they lost away and then beat Belgrade at home.
And Arsenal have also struggled there badly.
Yeah, because it's a horrible place to go in terms of, like, of course it's a beautifully cultural city. There's a lot of culture in Belgrade because of where it used to historically represent and what Serbia used to rule, but like, you know, there's a lot to go on there. So
PSG,
I would say
Real Madrid, Red Star Belgrade.
Correct.
Who's the best side in pot three?
Milan.
Mm. Oh wow. Okay. So you could, I mean, if you wanted like the All Stars Tour of Europe,
yeah,
you'd strictly then go into Bayern Munich. You'd then strictly go Bayern Munich.
Yeah.
Real Madrid, AC Milan.
Yeah.
Oh my God. See, like, there's not a Newcastle fan that would turn that down.
And also, like, amazing places to go. Maybe if you're a Newcastle fan, you don't want Red Star. Just because you don't want the away trip.
You'd rather have Milan than Belgrade.
Yeah,
for reasons of footballing prestige and Ryanair costs.
There's also an element of... Serbia is so cheap to get to. There's also an element of you want to go and play AC Milan in their final few seasons at Giuseppe Meazza in San Siro. So you want to play in that old stadium and sort of be seen in that light.
Have Newcastle not played AC Milan?
Probably.
This century. I feel like they have in 2001.
Maybe even earlier. Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
They played in the Champions League in the 21st century. So yeah. So that's pretty interesting. But then there are some other names in there which you could definitely see would be interesting. Inter Milan would be a fascinating draw. Dortmund would be a fascinating draw just because it kind of validates you as like the people's club a little bit. But I feel like Dortmund, the problem is you don't want to play at Dortmund. You don't want to play Inter Milan. To an extent, the reason you don't want to play Bayern is because Bayern have got that whole, like, we don't like the Saudi thing going on. There's going to be a banner.
You're the bad guys.
Yeah. You don't want to play...
Sorry, there's going to be a banner.
There is going to be a banner.
I agree there's going to be a banner.
You know what I mean, though? Real Madrid are, to an extent, you don't want to play them because they're kind of like, oh, no oil money kind of thing, even though they've got fly Emirates all over the front of their kit. meet like Real Madrid, like the champions of hypocrisy.
Real Madrid's boring because Vinicius scores twice in 10 minutes.
And you just look, and you look hands on hip game.
You look village, yeah. Yeah, it's just Bruno Guimaraes chasing like Modric.
Is it one of those games that, yeah, and also, yeah.
Also, Bellingham is going to score against every English club he plays against.
Because that's just, bear in mind though, preseason, they've not looked like they lost 3-0, 3 something to Barca.
Who, Real?
Yeah. In the Clasico that they played in preseason, I mean, Madrid didn't put their chances away, but nor did Barca. So it's an interesting one.
Barca are impossible to assess because they were so good in the league and so rubbish in Europe.
Yeah, you could tell what they were focusing on.
And every time they did something good, they undid it by signing a Premier League player every week.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was like, oh, there's Traore. Oh, there's Ferran Torres. Oh, there's Christensen.
Why are you doing that? Ferran Torres profiled him and he's such an interesting character. I think he makes such a great... I think, like, he's not a Liverpool signing, but if Newcastle signed Ferran Torres... Newcastle, no, he couldn't do with the pressure.
He left Valencia, his boyhood club, because they wouldn't make him captain at 21, which is... awesome.
It's not the way he tells the story.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, there's still like tension there, I think.
Well, listeners have got to listen then. So it's either Lawrence, the man who's interviewed him and profiled him, or Jamie, who vaguely remembers a headline from 2018.
I think it was
Choose Your Fighter.
I also think basically Valencia needed the money at the time, or wanted the money, wanted to cash in. And he was kind of told, you need to go here, mate.
Have you heard the Harry Redknapp Benjani story?
Which one?
He gets a 10 mil offer or 12 mil from City, and Benji, as he calls it, doesn't want to go. He's like, oh no, Benji, Manchester's awesome. You got to go. So he just keeps there at the airport on transfer deadline day, and Benjani just keeps on missing his flights. And they have to get someone from Spurs to get into the airport.
And like put him on the plane
to Manchester. Wow. And Harry's, oh, I love Benji, but for 12 million.
Yeah, like, but that's smart, right? Like, yeah. That's good money. The worst draw for them would be Feyenoord, Leipzig. Although they win that group.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Winning that group isn't so bad.
No, like, but then you go out to Lazio in the last 16 and it's like you haven't even had a Champions League run.
So just can I ask you this question? Do you think Newcastle United make the Champions League this season?
No. No. Hmm. I don't even think it's that close.
Really?
I think here's my edgy
top four gets pretty full, doesn't it?
They get to the quarterfinal of the Champions League, a la Leicester, but don't finish in the top four.
Wow.
I think Newcastle get Europe on the final day.
You mean Europa League or top four?
Conference. / Europa.
That's really far down.
I just don't think it is when you consider Man United, Chelsea, Tottenham. There's three new sides in the league essentially.
So what you're also saying, so whilst Newcastle were very consistent this season, Manchester United, Chelsea, Tottenham were all very inconsistent. So what you're saying is they'll become more consistent, match or better Newcastle's consistency. Well, Newcastle, so it's not about Newcastle getting worse.
They will get worse, a little.
But they're signed Tonali.
Yeah, but they've got so many extra games and the focus and it's difficult.
Right, I see what you're saying.
People have figured them out and it's like second season syndrome. And Newcastle will be great, but my sense is that Man United, Chelsea and Spurs were competing to be more rubbish than the team who played 3 hours early.
Fascinating.
And Newcastle were trying really, really hard and were really, really good. And it was still a battle.
It's fascinating stuff. But they would win this group and you get a lot more money if you make it to the round of 16. Feyenoord, Leipzig, because they beat both those teams.
They do.
Salzburg, they beat Lazio.
The Red Bulls, if you have two Red Bull sides.
Can you do that?
Yeah, you must be able to. Because otherwise City wouldn't be able to be in the same group as...
New York.
Well, that's definitely true.
There's definitely some sort of crossover.
But yeah, but the City group own other teams in Europe as well. I remember looking at grad schemes a few years ago at the City group.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. Fun times in the Champions League. This is going to be, I'm going to call it, I don't think this is a classic season in the Champions League.
What makes you say that?
Liverpool aren't in it. No, right. I think, actually, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I've
called that all
wrong.
Last year in the current format gives it a kind of vibe?
Maybe it does give it a kind of vibe. Maybe you're right.
The year PSG go out in the group stage rather than the last 16 could be fun.
It's going to be interesting. Maybe I'm wrong, actually. I think my first call was wrong in this instance. Actually, I think this is going to be a classic year. Man City, Manchester United, Arsenal, Newcastle United. Pretty good contingent from England.
Yeah, like City are now as red. Man United are fun. Arsenal are fun. Wow, Arsenal are really fun. I can consider Arsenal in the Champions League.
Arsenal in the Champions League are like... They're pretty much They're also an unknown quantity to an extent, so teams don't know how to play them. Like, you've never really seen that football from... You've not seen Arteta ball in Europe. You've not seen how he chooses to play these one-off games.
I live with Arsenal fans, and I have done for years. And it's just nice to not have to watch a game on Thursday night.
Right.
With them sort of slumped, uninterested, but you're sort of downstairs anyway watching it.
Yeah, kind of nice for that next season.
Kind of nice for them to be buzzing to lose. Oh, you know how there was that trope of Arsenal lose to the promoted team on the Friday night of the first day of the Premier League? I cannot wait for Red Star Belgrade 3, Arsenal 1. Sending off Gabriel, 16 minutes.
An English team is going to draw Red Star. Maybe just statistically.
And they'll hammer them. They'll hammer them at home and lose a key man to injury. It's like Saliba. It's a centre-half.
It's one of those. Thanks a lot for listening to the podcast, guys. I really hope you enjoyed the conversation. It's been really good to chat to you as well, Jamie.
Thanks, lads.
We're doing like a little weird follow-up this week. We've seen some videos on YouTube and we wanted to do just a little commentary on that. Not critically, but yeah, listen to it on the Sunday for this podcast. Thanks a lot for joining us. It's been a good time.
It's been a good time.
See you again on the next podcast.
Ciao, ciao.
Ciao, ciao. Ciao, ciao. Ciao, ciao.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.